Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. This week, we are looking at a holiday. It is St. Patrick's Day, the 17th. And maybe you're a little bored of the same old corned beef, cabbage, and potatoes. Maybe you're thinking you could go for something a little bit more authentic than green bagels this year to celebrate. So I have a guest who is very knowledgeable about all those authentic Irish traditions, as well as farming, Irish farming. She lives on an Irish farm, and but she was a city girl before, and then she started a blog all about it. And I'm so excited about her first book called The Farmette Cookbook, Recipes and Adventures from My Life on an Irish Farm. The authority on Irish food and farming, it is Eamonn McDonald.
Oh my God, thank you.
Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks, Kathy. This is brilliant.
I'm glad you could come across the pond for this show.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really fun to be back in Brooklyn because I actually lived in Brooklyn Heights.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Before this whole life change.
Before this whole life change, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that. So you moved for love.
I moved for love. Somewhat reluctantly, I think. I think in a time where I think so many people are thinking of swapping over to quiet country farming lives. I wasn't exactly in that boat. I was a little bit more trepidatious about moving from the city, but love struck. And, you know, I ended up over. But initially, we lived actually in a little village in County Limerick called Adair, which is a very beautiful medieval village, and it felt like it was kind of splitting the difference.
Fairy tale.
It is a very fairy tale kind of town, but it would have kind of bridged the gap between cosmopolitan and then complete farm country life. So eventually we built our own farm, our own home on the farm, and we live kind of intergenerationally on the farm with all of my in-laws. And so all three houses are on the farm and we live together. It's very interesting, very, very different from any life I ever imagined. Yeah.
And what I love about reading your stories and recipes in this book is that you really reflect the traditions, the age-old traditions in Irish cuisine, because you're on a farm and because you have, you know, buttermilk left over from separating the butter from the whey, and because you have, like, you know, just goose fat to use in your larder and all these things. It makes so much sense.
It's a real honest way of living. I mean, I have to say there's such providence in real traditional Irish recipes that I never would have guessed. I mean, I guess part of what was interesting to start writing about in my blog was exploring and understanding and being introduced to really traditional Irish recipes, just living in the countryside with very old-fashioned family and neighbors and community. And learning, you know, about the soda breads and the tea bracks and the things like that, that they hold very dear, but don't necessarily think is the most special thing in the world. But for me, there's just a real providence, I think, to that. And then I'd come back to the States and people would be like, there's nothing good about Irish food. And I would say, there's absolutely so much goodness in Irish food that you have no idea. So I was kind of on a tear on that for a long time. Really just trying to look at what was positive about Irish food, and then obviously having to start to grow nearly everything that we eat.
Yeah, because your supermarket was 45 minutes away.
And then it wouldn't have compared to, like, I really was into Whole Foods and all that.
And they don't have that.
No, they don't. They have, it's getting closer, but anyway, the Whole Foods are right on the farm, so.
Yeah. I mean, I was transported when I was reading this. I felt like, if you asked me today if I've ever made butter, I'd be like, yeah, totally. Wait, but I just read about it. But it just sounds so natural and so effortless almost as a way of life just through reading this. But I wonder, how do you hope a reader will take this and I guess make do with it if they live in a city like myself? And
it's interesting. Like,
should I make butter at home? Do you think that's practical?
Well, you know, I actually just finished writing a piece for Food 52 on with that audience in mind, like, okay. The city audience is like, give me a break. Like, why are we going to make butter when we can just go right around the corner and get the most amazing butter from wherever?
From an Irish butter,
from Kerrygold or whatever. Right. But I would just say too that it just literally takes 15 minutes. Like, if you're having a dinner party and people are coming over, you can just pop butter into your mixer if you have a stand mixer. And within 15 minutes, you have fresh butter. And there's nothing better.
That's
like
cool.
And cream cheese. Like, cream cheese on... the best one, I think, out of all the DIY dairy is cream cheese, especially if you're a Brooklynite or live in New York. Like, to have your own cream cheese.
Wow.
It is...
Wait, do you make your own green bagels, too, to serve them with?
We have. Jeffrey and I actually made bagels, but not green ones. Yeah, I was desperate. Yeah, I do get really desperate for bagels in the countryside. Nice. And that's even just hard to find in Ireland. You can't get a good bagel at all. So you do make them on your own, but they're not as good.
Well, that's funny. There's so many breads and so many traditional foods to talk about. But speaking of St. Patrick's Day, I know you have a little section on that in your book. And... Amen. Did you want to kind of give us some tips or some traditional cuisine guidance on that holiday?
I would love to. I wanted to read a little anecdote from my book, if I can find it here. But basically, St. Patrick's Day in Ireland was just shockingly different for me.
Okay.
And I suppose when I lived in the States, I wouldn't have been like a big super partier for St. Patrick's Day anyway, but I always knew that there would be corned beef and cabbage and maybe the odd river dyed green and, you know, and bagels green or whatever.
Yeah.
So when I had my first St. Patrick's Day at the farm, first of all, it was so quiet.
No drinking
no.
songs and no.
Okay. Well, okay. So there would be... So okay. There is in Dublin and Cork, and they call it kind of like wedding or drowning the shamrock. but still, it doesn't compare to what we do here. And when you're in the countryside, like in the local pubs would be open, people would go down for their normal pints or things like that. But it's a religious holiday, first and foremost, in Ireland. That's the big thing that it was like, oh my God, are you... how?
I guess Saint I never Patrick. Thought of it.
It's, yeah, St. Patrick. Okay. So I'll just read like the little story about my first St. Patrick's
Let's
Day.
Let's do it.
Okay, so in the Irish countryside, the spirit of St. Patrick's Day really lives on. My husband and his family still pick shamrock clovers to pin on their lapels for the day, and now I am part of that special tradition as well. I will never forget my first St. Patrick's Day experience after moving to Ireland. Everything in the little village nearest to us was closed on the day. The post office, the bank, a number of shops. About the only place with open doors was the church, and it was not only a national holiday, but a religious one as well. My mother-in-law invited us to the farmhouse for dinner, and I could hardly contain my excitement about having my first authentic Irish corned beef and cabbage. We sat down at the dinner table while Peggy brought out generous plates of roasted pork loin with mashed potatoes covered in butter and creamy white parsley sauce, accompanied by a bit of boiled cabbage on the side. I was stunned. Where was the corned beef, and why on earth was there so little cabbage? I explained to my new family that in America, most people eat corned beef and cabbage on St. Patrick's Day. My father-in-law looked at me like I was mad and then calmly reasoned, "We do not eat corned beef here. 'Twouldn't be the nicest." I could tell by the look in his eye that corned beef was not held in the same esteem as the beautiful chunk of pork loin known as bacon in Ireland. I felt at once surprised and embarrassed. Over the years, our Paddy's Day, and that's with two D's, not T's.
Okay.
It's very offensive to say Paddy with two T's, I guess. Celebrations have evolved. We have begun the ritual of going for long walks on the farm and visiting one of the few fairy forts, which are these amazing circular grass mounds that people used to live in ancient times here. So we might do a picnic in there, and I'll bring all the fixings, and we might sit under the ivy-covered tree and nibble away all the time on the lookout for fairies. That was when Jeffrey was a little bit younger. Since I always like to try something different from roast bacon and cabbage, one year I made Asian-style pot sticker dumplings with pork cabbage and parsley sauce.
Nice.
And I borrowed the dumpling wrapper recipe from Molly Yeh, my friend. She's also living on a farm in the States. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this recipe is for bacon and cabbage pot stickers, and that was my first experience.
Wow. Okay. Corned beef is not good enough for St. Patty's Day.
It's actually like Spam. It's in a tin. That's what it... Yeah, so it's Spam. That's why he looked at me with the, you know...
How like, did this catch on? I'm fascinated by how things catch on in American, like, why, and, like, these things are just so, like, literally, my mom would make corned beef, cabbage, and potatoes every St. Patrick's Day, and she's not Irish, she's Chinese, by the way.
Okay.
So, like, this doesn't make any sense, but we all do it, and why is that dish chosen for...
I just think that I, you know, I've talked to a lot of people about this diaspora, and they think that a lot of these things just kind of evolved because it was an adaptation to what seemed the closest to those flavors when in Irish Americans, perhaps.
Weird. Well, looking through your book, there are a lot more impressive looking dishes, like the roast pork sort of like loin that is wrapped here in the crackling crust, sort of like a porchetta, it looks like. And then you will have this wonderful oxtail and ale pie. I mean, that sounds, if that doesn't sound Irish food to you, I don't know what does.
It's a bit fussy. It takes a long time, but it is so worth it. It is incredible. And it's such an economical cut to the oxtail.
I know. I love it.
Yeah. Huh.
Of course. And then tell me about full Irish slab pie. This is a very beautiful looking dish. And it's a pie, like a meat pie. Like there's so many, you know, there's so many wonderful Irish meat pies that I think that we've neglected here. But this one just sounds particularly interesting. You know, there's the potatoes and then there's a, you know, baked beans inside. It's sort of like a whole like kind of meal, but tucked inside a pie.
It is. And it came from entertaining guests, like having people coming visiting the farm or extra farm workers, people helping on the farm, and feeling like it's hard to make. Everybody wants a full Irish, which is every, you know, it's the rashers and the sausages and eggs and beans and mushrooms and puddings. And so basically, you know, if you can prepare it into this pie the night before, it can sit in the fridge and then you just pop it in the oven in the morning and you have this huge pie and it's just really, you know, can sustain you for the day.
Filling.
Yeah.
We're going to cut to a quick little commercial interlude and we'll be right back, chatting more.
Okay, thanks.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
All right, we're back chatting more with Iman McDonald. The Farmette Cookbook is her new cookbook. And let's talk about some lesser-known Irish food specialties, because I was surprised. Your book is very long, by the way, and I really appreciate that, because you go through so many classic, but also your own sort of renditions, too, on Irish food. Okay, buttered eggs. I like to think that I know a lot about how to prepare eggs, but this I did not. I never heard of.
Yeah, so it's just like a really old, again, one of those really old traditions that a lot of people don't even do anymore. But I came across it and I said, let's try this. And it is incredible. You rub the eggs in butter.
You rub
a raw egg.
With the shell on.
Yeah, in butter. And
totally
in butter. It's preserving it. But what happens when you actually cook the egg is then this real buttery flavor comes through.
Wow.
It's incredible. And again, like that takes nothing to do.
And that's like because the shell is all porous and it just kind of, do you have to like let it?
Yeah, the shells are porous.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a
brilliant.
It's Irish gold. That's what they call buttered eggs Irish gold.
I'm definitely going to have to try that. Maybe not a lot of people realize that seaweed is part of the traditional Irish cuisine, and also known as dulse or dillisk.
Yeah.
So this, you know, obviously kind of wild foraged, plentiful and very nutritious greens are just, you know, part of the diet. And how do they prepare it?
It's usually dried, mm-hmm. the dillisk. In my book, I have it in a miso recipe, a soup recipe.
Yum.
For miso soup and a little bit of dillisk. It's kind of peppery. Have you had it?
Yeah.
It's probably the same here. But it's so easily forageable. I mean, and the coastlines of Ireland are just filled with, there's nori, there's everything. There's, mm-hmm. You can make like the sea spaghetti, you know,
sea
like
spaghetti?
Crisps from sea spaghetti. Which is
that
just
like
seaweed.
A type of seaweed?
It's a little seaweed.
Okay.
It really like, looks like spaghetti. It's green.
Wow.
But yeah, you can get like even nori. And on the West Coast, it's usually a little bit better to forage from than like the inland rivers and stuff. But it's, everything is tidal, mm-hmm. in Ireland. So mm-hmm. all of that, yeah.
Yeah. Huge. So you could just get the dried seaweed and
the dried seaweed from anywhere. And it's really beautiful in butter, too.
Mmm. All right. So, yeah, lots of seafood eaten throughout these recipes. And I love all the smoked fish that is throughout. And the crab boil. Tell me a little bit about that. Because I thought when we think of a crab boil, we think of, you know, down south cooking in America, that is.
Yeah, I guess that's like there's a few recipes in the book that are just borrowing from American things that I would have missed. And I'm not from the south, but anybody loves a pet crab boil or shrimp boil. So, and the thing about that, Kathy, is that people don't eat a lot of crab and lobster and stuff in Ireland, even though it's plentiful. And it's also very inexpensive. But fish in general has been a hard sell in Ireland, even though it's an island, because it would have been thought of as something that was more...
Poor man's food.
Yeah. So, but it's just, I mean, the amount of fish and seafood there is, you know, it's just insane. So you can get these crabs that they look kind of, I suppose, like Dungeness crabs, or they're called they're brown crabs, and they're like €2 each for a big crab like that. So just to have a bunch of people over and throw it out on the table in the summertime sipping cider.
Have you tried introducing this to people to kind of get them into
we do it
shellfish
first for the, especially with, you know, because most of our friends are obviously Irish or English, and they're a little bit like, wait a minute, are we eating with our hands? It's very bizarre. But then it just turns out to be so much fun.
Hey, you might be, you know, making impact here in Irish cuisine. We'll see.
The other thing that's really nice is this, actually, I think, sorry. The fish, I love the sea chapter. It's one of my favorite chapters because I love seafood. But the Dublin lawyer, which is a...
Dublin lawyer.
It's a classic Irish dish. And nobody knows why it was called the Dublin lawyer, because lawyers aren't even called lawyers in Ireland. They're called solicitors. So I'm not sure what that meant, but it is, like it's a butterflied lobster, but it has a whiskey buttery cream sauce.
Whiskey.
It's dangerous.
Lovely. that sounds like a great seafood sauce.
Yeah.
Instead of white wine.
Yeah.
Whiskey.
Oh, Irish whiskey.
And then there's also, I noticed, you know, there's a lot of use of alcohol in some of these dishes.
I'm noticing that.
The oysters and stout. So you that's a huge tradition there. Okay,
yeah.
So how does one get into this? How do you eat it? It's just raw oysters shucked.
They're just shucked, and you just pour them down and then
follow it with the
with a really thick stout. Doesn't have to be Guinness.
Oh, okay. I loved the one really simple dish. And you should just tell me what your favorites are too, because I'm going off on my, you know, favorites. But the potato with the cabbage, and they had a funny name.
Col cannon.
Yeah.
Now that, if you're going to do anything on St. Patrick's Day, like with your mom or whatever, it's a real buttery mash, and it just either has chopped up cabbage or kale through it.
Buttery mashed potatoes with chopped up cabbage or kale throughout.
Yeah.
That sounds like the perfect, like, you know,
Doesn't
meal
that just sound
for
perfect?
Home.
That's
yeah.
all you need.
Oh my
you
God.
Don't need anything else. And
I
if
know.
You want to do so, that's Kilcannon in the northern part of Ireland. It's there's they call it champ, or it's a different variation of it, which has like spring onion
ramps or something. Yeah.
Yeah, or ramps. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's really lovely.
And I just love all these names, too. So one came across as interesting to me, again, using alcohol, and it's called Moonshine Syllabub.
And when we were shooting this, we were saying syllabub, because syllabub is very popular. Well, it's an old dessert in okay. Ireland and England. But it's become more popular now. But I'd never heard of it here, and I don't know. It'll
syllabub?
Be here right soon.
No, it doesn't sound like a food to me.
It's basically it's cream. But when we were shooting the book, I kept saying syllabubby makes you tubby.
But it does look like it would do that.
It's just cream, and it's basically it's tempered with an acid that is usually a liquid base. So in this case, I use the traditional Irish moonshine, which is called poachin or poachin.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it's made, it's potato alcohol, grain,
sure.
potato alcohol that's
strong
massively
stuff.
Strong. And you can actually get that again. It used to be illegal up until just a couple of years ago, but you can buy it now.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
Party.
Party, yeah. Party at Kathy's. Poachin.
Okay.
Poaching
sorry
party.
If I'm like, you know, these are very exotic to me, but the Barm Brack is a traditional tea bread.
It is. Okay. And, so, yeah. And so that tea bread is.
Sounds like soda bread similar, no?
No, it's not quite a soda bread, but it is like a variation of so many different breads that are basically like fruit bread, cake breads that we wouldn't have fancy too much here.
Okay.
But that one is lovely. It's the Halloween Barm Brack. I mean, we serve it on Halloween, and inside there's usually a token. It means something, like if you get a ring, it means that you might get married. But yeah, it's a lovely fruit bread.
So you put stuff inside the bread.
Yeah, and you have to wrap it in something so that you make sure nobody ingests it. But yeah, different things. Like back in the really olden days, they'd have, I think if you got like a pea, it meant that you were never going to get married or something like terrible.
Somebody would actually do that to someone
and
put
there was
a pea
like,
in there just to say you're never going to get married?
There, and also there was one that would say like you know you were gonna die.
You're gonna die. I need to make these Barm Bracks for all my friends, and then like see who picks which one. Is that how it works?
It's you just wait for them to get the slice.
Oh, I see. Okay. Oh, that's evil. All right.
But you know what? That reminds me of, there's a recipe in there called Mad May Eve tea cakes.
Okay, Mad May Eve.
Okay, so May Eve is this thing in Ireland, which is the evening before May 1st.
Okay.
Coming I feel like up? We should play scary music now.
Yeah. 'Twas the evening before May 1st.
It was then. Mad May Eve. And in our community, the priests will go around with holy water and like bless all of the houses and all the land and the farms
okay.
to keep any kind of evil spirits away.
Right.
Because they really, in many, many places in Ireland, really still believe in some of this really old folklore.
Pagan stuff.
Because
May Day is like a pagan holiday.
Yes,
yeah.
And okay. that's it. And so my in-laws would say to me stories that they really honestly believe, you wow. know, that I would think, wow, that sounds like some, I couldn't believe, you know, just women that might, like, I love the idea of this. Like, for instance, maybe women might transform into hares, like rabbit hares, at night after midnight, and then go have tea parties. And then they, in the morning, they'd be back to women again.
Oh, so or, Mad May Eve getaway.
Yeah, or if somebody left something on your farm or your land, like a piece of ham wrapped up in newspaper, it could mean that you'll lose everything. And very superstitious. Yeah, so, but those tea cakes are really, really good. They'll get you through any scary
They do sound delightful. And now that I know that you can pack so many different meanings into it, that sounds like even more fun. So Eman, what are you going to do this St. Paddy's Day? Something kind of, you know, sober and religious with family? Or
we're actually arriving back in Ireland at like 6 o'clock in the morning on Paddy's Day.
Okay.
So I could sleep for the day. No. We'll have probably do like bacon and cabbage and
bacon and cabbage.
That would sound good for the coming back and being comforting. I don't think I'm going to do the pot stickers this year,
okay.
But I really think everybody else should.
Yeah, I think that's a great compliment. And also, it's you know, the bacon and the cabbage. It sounds just as simple as.
It is.
I know. Most anything.
But
easier
it's easy. And that's another interesting thing. Like my mother-in-law, may she rest in peace, she, you know, would always prepare the massive roast dinners for lunch every day for the farm. I mean, massive.
Mm.
And of course, I'm sort of taking over that. And the fact is, like, that is the easiest thing to do.
Right.
Which it always seems so daunting. But if you're going to do anything to make a roast dinner with potatoes and stuff, that's so simple. I mean...
A massive roast, and then, yeah, potatoes. And then you can use the leftovers throughout the week from the Sunday dinner.
Like,
I like this tradition. I can't wait to try my hand at more of these Irish foods. And this book is so lovely. Where can we find more of your writing? I guess Food 52, you got a new piece there. But should we check out the Farmette?
Yeah, farmette.ie. And I sometimes write for Condé Nast and the Irish Farmers Journal.
Excellent. What else have you got going on here in New York during
your
trip?
Oh, yes. I'm launching the book tomorrow on Tuesday night at Powerhouse Arena in Brooklyn, here in Brooklyn.
Fabulous.
At 7 p.m. It would be great to have you. Will you come?
Yes, I will, actually. I'm right around there. So, and will we have any barn bracks or any little treats?
I've been told that they have been preparing recipes from my book. They wouldn't let me cook. Yeah, so, yeah, and lots of beer, stout. So...
Excellent.
But you must come to Ireland. Come to the farm and visit us.
I would love to.
Seriously.
Wow. It sounds like a magical place. And congrats for maintaining that farm and learning how to make butter and all these wonderful cheeses for us. I guess that's about all the time we have today. But thank you so much, Iman.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it. Thank
you. All right. Everyone check out the Farmette Cookbook. And we'll see you next week on Heritage Radio.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.